right, we're going to get started just jumping right into this whole art of flowing. The first thing I want to address here is what exactly is flowing? Here's a brief definition of flowing. Flowing is the process of taking notes during a debate round on the arguments and examples presented. So flowing is basically the technical debate term that we're going to use to talk about taking notes and writing down what the other side is saying in the middle of a debate round. It's important because these are going to be the arguments the other side is making, so you need to keep detailed information as to what they're saying so that you can rebut those arguments later on. You're going to have these notes on what's already taken place so you can start to keep track of how the round is progressing. And this is also a place for you to write down the arguments that you will make in your next speech and later on in the debate round. So this is flowing. This is what flowing entails. What do you need to flow? You're going to need a legal pad. Typically, they're either yellow or white. This is what a legal pad looks like. This is actually one that I used last year in debate, so you've got all my notes on it. Sometimes you get them in different colors as well. The color doesn't really matter so much. What you want is space to write on, though. Sometimes you also have flow sheets. I know Training Minds has some of these flow sheets. Brent, could you hold yours up for a minute, please? Thank you. All right. So that's the type of flow sheet that Training Minds actually sells. You can use either the legal pad or the flow sheets, which are already labeled for you and broken out into the rounds, whichever one is easier for you to use. Once again, pens, lots and lots of pens. And then finally, post-it notes. As you can tell here, I've got post-it notes on these pages. The reason why I have post-it notes is because as you're thinking of questions to ask in cross-examination, you want a place to write those down so that you don't forget them. I've always written my cross-examination questions on this post-it, and then when I got up and asked questions of the opposing side, I would just mark down their answer right next to the question so that I would easily be able to match that up. So everything else on here isn't cross-examination. These are strictly the arguments presented in the speeches. I had a system where I just used checks and X's, really, because one thing that you guys will learn when I talk about cross-examination is you want all of your questions as much as possible to be yes or no questions. So as he was talking, I could just do check mark or X. Really quick, really simple. You can cut him off really quickly so that he doesn't keep on rambling. So how do you flow? First thing you want to do is divide your page into 5 equal-sized columns in landscape view. So this is portrait view. This is landscape view, all right? So go ahead and divide it into 5 roughly equal-sized columns. You know, there's no need to measure them out, just sort of guesstimate, but divide it up into those 5 columns. The next thing you want to do is draw a horizontal line across the middle of the page. You see it right here. Here's my line going all the way across the middle. Typically, the top part, the half of the page above the line, was a little bit larger than the part below the line, and I'll explain why in just a minute. So I had 5 columns here, line across the middle, a little bit larger on top than the bottom. Your third step is going to be to label your columns. So here are the labels that you'd use. At the top of the first column, you use the letters AC. Anyone remember what AC stands for? Affirmative constructive. Top of the next column, you have NC/1NR, which is? Negative constructive and first negative rebuttal. Third column, you have 1AR, which is? First affirmative rebuttal. Fourth one, you have 2NR, which is? Second negative rebuttal. And then the last column, you have 2AR, which is the second affirmative rebuttal. Right, exactly. So you're just sort of labeling your columns like that to make it a lot easier. And then here, this is why I have the horizontal line across the middle of the page. You're going to use the top half of the columns to flow affirmative arguments and the bottom half to flow negative. So here's what it looks like. Let me remove the post-it for a minute. As you can tell, this first little box down here is going to be blank. There's really no use for it. If you want to write something else in there, you can, but for the most part, you're not going to use it. This box up here, so your first column top half, is where you write the affirmative case. If it's yours, then you write your outline of the case up here. If it's if it's your opponent who's on affirmative, you write your outline of their case here. Then you write any argument talking about this case goes across the top. The negative case comes here. Any argument specifically related to the negative case goes across the bottom. Does that make sense? I'm seeing a few heads nodding, but what about the rest of you? Kale looks really puzzled.
So, when I'm sitting down as the affirmative and the negative is doing this thing, he goes in that bottom.
All right, so let's say you're the affirmative speaker. You would write an outline of your own case up here. If I'm the negative, you would write an outline of my case in this box. Any arguments that I brought up against your affirmative case would go here. All right, because it's still the same speech, but it's addressing the affirmative.
Can I try to connect them to the...
Right. The arrows here are going to be connecting which particular part I address. So if in my rebuttal I say, my opponent stated in contention one that, discovery of fact endangers liberty. So this was last year's resolution. Then in negative, whatever argument came up against discovery of fact endangers liberty would go there. Do you see how that works? Similarly, the negative down here says that due process prohibits the application of truth. Any argument against that contention is going to go in this box here.
On the affirmative, I want to write my arguments against him.
Since you're the affirmative, any argument that you make against the negative is going to be in the bottom half. Any argument he makes against you is going to be up here. Does that system make sense to you? All right. The next step is to go ahead and pre-flow your case. What I mean by pre-flow is before the round begins, you are going to know which side you are on. You're either going to be affirmative or negative. Go ahead and write in an outline of your case in either the affirmative or negative box so that during the round you don't have to worry about writing down your own case. Now, granted, you're going to have your case written out and you have it there in front of you, but for the sake of flowing, it makes it a lot easier to just put your case onto the flow pad so you can directly see the arguments that are made against your case. Okay? As to what do you write when you flow a case? You're going to flow it like this. Include definitions, everything related to a value, including the definition, the value link, the importance of it, the contentions, the taglines, the main arguments, analogies, explanations, and then any sort of proof, quote, stats, current or historic events, examples, and anecdotes. Now that seems like a lot, and you're probably wondering how in the world do you fit all of that onto this much of paper space? A couple things to keep in mind. First, write small. If you can't write small, do practice writing small. You're not going to have to write really, really tiny, but at least try to write small enough that you can fit as much information as possible onto your flow pad. Also, use abbreviations. Abbreviations are going to be your best friend when you're flowing. There are a few abbreviations that you guys should be familiar with that a lot of people use. For instance, justice. Just abbreviate justice as J. So when you see, if someone has a value of justice, just write down value colon J. And you should be able to know from being familiar with those abbreviations that you meant justice, as opposed to writing out the whole word justice every time it comes up. individual rights is simply abbreviated IR. Human rights, HR. Natural rights, NR. Let's see, some of the particular terms from this year's resolution. Anytime the word government comes up, just a G-O-V apostrophe T is a shorthand for government. If you have the word or the phrase moral obligation, you know, you could abbreviate that as simply as M-O for moral obligation. To some extent, the abbreviation system that you use is going to be one that you develop on your own, but really work on trying to develop a system so that you don't have to spend as much time writing out full words. Just write in shorthand. Let's see, what else? What other abbreviations? Definitions. When you're writing your definitions, when you're writing your opponent's definitions up here, you do not have to write the full definition. Just write a couple key words from the definition. You will find out that as you continue to debate throughout the season, you'll see the same definitions come up over and over and over again. After a while, you'll become so familiar with the definitions that you can write down maybe a phrase up here for the definition and basically be able to quote the definition back because you've heard it so many times. So just write down a couple key words or phrases that will remind you about that, but don't try to write out the whole thing. Value can be abbreviated simply with a V. Just do V, colon, and then whatever their value was. Criterion, CR. And then contentions, just do a C and then the number next to it. So contention 1, C1, and then write the tagline. You know, contention 2, C2. So there are lots of different abbreviations that you can use to sort of help with the process of flowing and save you time. The main difficulty of flowing is that while you're writing down what your opponent is saying and paying attention to his case, you also are trying to think of cross-examination questions at the same time. So using abbreviations is probably the best method to saving yourself time and giving yourself enough time to think of some really good cross-examination questions. When you're looking at the proof, like the different examples, if it's an example that you really don't know a whole lot about, you might write down, you know, a fair amount of notes just so that you know what it is. Other than that, just find maybe a word or two to sum up the example. You know, like Travis was giving the examples in there earlier this morning. Everything I wrote down on the board was just a phrase that described it. Like for instance, UN, United Nations. You know, if someone brings up an example with the United Nations, just write UN on here. You should be able to know roughly what they're saying and it should help you remember. So this isn't meant to be an exact transcript of the round. It's just meant more to jog your memory and help you out when you get up to speak next. Next step to flowing does deal with cross-examination questions. You have to write these cross-ex questions during your opponent's speech.
But you can use prep time?
You cannot use prep time for cross-examination. That is the one time you cannot use it. You can use prep time before your rebuttal after cross-examination. So once you've finished a cross-examination session and you're about to start your rebuttal, you can use prep time then. But in between the end of your opponent's speech and the beginning of your cross-examination, you are not allowed to use prep time. So all of your thinking for CX questions, CX is just another way of saying cross-examination, all your prep for CX questions has to be done while the other person is speaking. The way you're going to do this, and we'll get more into it tomorrow, but you want to specifically ask questions that are targeting holes and weaknesses in your opponent's case. You might have the occasional clarification question that you need to ask if you missed something or if you weren't 100% sure about what your opponent was saying. But generally speaking, you want to keep those clarification questions to a minimum because those are the times when your opponent is probably going to take the greatest advantage to run away with your time and just waste it all re-explaining their case. I know that debaters like to talk about their own case a lot. They don't like to really answer your questions about their case, especially if it's starting to push them into a really awkward corner. Those are situations where they'll try to run with it as much as possible. They'll see if maybe they can get an extra 3 minutes to explain their case, as opposed to you questioning them on their case. So definitely think of questions that are more designed to rein that in. You definitely want to write down the answers that your opponent gives to your cross-ex questions, because those answers are going to be really, really important later on in the rebuttals. You can often point back to cross-examination for a specific example when your opponent contradicted himself or when he agreed with your side, and that can be extremely persuasive. On your flow, you're also going to write down your rebuttal arguments. So what we see here, these three columns are all our rebuttal columns. Down here, you have the negative's case written. This is the affirmative's response to the negative case. This is going to be the negative response to the affirmative's response of the negative case. And then this is the affirmative's response to the negative's response of the affirmative's response to the negative case. Made sense? Same thing works here on affirmative. I know, it gets a little confusing after a while, but it's just case, response, response, response after that. Case, response, 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 just alternating which side. For instance, if you're the negative, you're listening to the affirmative speak, in addition to thinking of cross-examination questions, at the same time, you have to start thinking of what arguments you're going to make to refute these contentions. The arguments that you're going to make, go ahead and write them up here. So like draw an arrow. If you wanted to address contention one, draw an arrow and then write down what you're going to say. So this is sort of like your notepad. When you get up to speak, you can look at it and figure out, oh yeah, that's what I was going to say about the value. That's what I was going to say about that application. And you have it all written there. Then write the opponent's refutation of your rebuttals. We got that already. Keep the affirmative on top, negative on bottom. I bring that up again just because sometimes that can get a little bit confusing with this format. But if you practice it enough, it will become a lot easier to flow like that. As opposed to, I've seen some other people before get rid of this middle line and sort of mix all of this together in the columns. And that type of flow can get really confusing. So I've always had the line in the middle just to separate them out and make it a little bit more organized and easier to follow. And then finally, line up the original arguments and subsequent responses. What I mean is this. Let's see. Let me find a good one to use. All right, this one's kind of messy, but it was a good round, so I'm going to use it. Alright, this was probably one of my favorite rounds ever. It looks messy and complex. It really wasn't. I just get really messy with my handwriting sometimes. What you want to do is, for each of the original arguments that was made, see whether someone responded to it in each speech. So see whether that argument carries all the way until the end of the round, or if someone drops it somewhere along the way. When we say someone drops an argument, that means they didn't address it. So if the argument was introduced by the affirmative, negative addressed it, and then affirmative addressed it, and then the negative decides, it's not that big of a deal, I'm not going to address it in my last speech, that's what we call a dropped argument.
Isn't that counted as points against you if you drop an argument?
Depends on the judge. Some judges will count a dropped argument against you, and some won't. But at least keep track of it, because it's something that you can bring up. If your judge doesn't count it against your opponent, then that's fine. It hasn't done any harm to bring it up anyway. So go ahead and keep track and see whether an argument carries through a round. And when we talk about rebuttals, I'll also explain a technique known as grouping, which helps you address more arguments than you would be able to just going point by point down a flow. Make sure when you call it a dropped argument that it is actually a dropped argument. If it is just an example that they didn't address, don't call it a dropped argument. Examples are different from arguments. Argument is specifically going to be the logic, reasoning, and philosophy that you've used. The examples are things like statistics, historical examples, quotes, and things like that. If you bring up a historical example like, what's one that Travis had on the board? Genocide. Let's say you bring up the Rwandan genocide as a historical example. Just because your opponent didn't address it doesn't mean that's now a dropped argument. You can make the statement that they did not address my example, but just be a little bit careful calling it a dropped argument because some judges will take issue with that terminology. Also keep in mind that in those situations, if they've not addressed your example, but they do address the argument that you used behind that example, some judges will still give your opponent credit for that because they addressed the main argument behind it. That's something for you guys to keep in mind as well with your own rebuttals, is you don't necessarily have to address every last example the other person brings up. I mean, you'd preferably like to be able to address as many as possible, but there are some debaters who will bring up, frankly, a ridiculous amount of examples. I mean, I've seen cases, affirmative cases, 6-minute cases with as many as, you know, 6 different examples plus multiple contentions. That can be a lot to address.
So is that helping the round, or is that just trying to overwhelm your opponent? Like, how does that...
Bringing up that many examples is strictly to overwhelm your opponent and try to get them to drop arguments. Yeah.
While you're writing down what he's saying, are you supposed to be also writing down questions you want to ask him? Well, not necessarily questions you want to ask him, but
arguments
you want to bring up all at the same time?
It depends on your style. Some people will not do that at all. They'll just write down what he's saying, and then during prep time, they'll come up with all of their arguments.
So when he finishes, you write down what he said while he does it, then when he's done...
You can start prep time. Right. So some people will do all of their arguments during prep time. For me personally, I've kind of enjoyed coming up with arguments while he's speaking, because as he's speaking, and this is one thing that you guys need to learn how to do as well, you've got to analyze what your opponent is saying while he's saying it, because think about it later and it's not going to be the same. You know, he's moved on, he's talking about something else, it's going to be a little bit harder. But if you're really thinking through what he's saying as he's making that argument, questions will pop up. You know, you might think of something and you'll think, that sounds a little funny. And even if you don't know the exact argument you want to make, at least make note of that on your flow pad so that during prep time, you can spend more time thinking about that particular one and what exactly was wrong with that argument. Okay? Next thing I wanted to look at is, what do you actually do with your flow? Other than just keeping track of arguments, you want to use it to evaluate a round after it is finished. No matter what the judge writes on the ballot, whether the judge votes for you or against you, whatever happens, go back and look at your flow and make your own decision. Based on your flow, do you think you deserve to win that round? Do you think you deserve to lose that round? Self-evaluation is going to be an extremely important technique to cultivate here. Even if a judge says that you won a round, you know, look at your own arguments and tell yourself, yes, the judge made that decision, but personally, did that round meet up to my own standards? The only way that you're going to get better in debate is if you're meeting the standards that you set for yourself, as opposed to the standards that other people are setting for you. So use it as an evaluation tool. Note any dropped arguments, and also note any new examples. I mentioned yesterday that you don't want to bring up new examples in the second affirmative rebuttal, because then the negative never gets a chance to respond. The negative has a little bit more leeway in the second negative rebuttal, since there is another affirmative speech afterwards. But you want to keep track of all of those, so that if a new example does creep up, you can try and address it. Yes.
I've heard that you shouldn't bring up any new arguments or examples or anything like that after you're instructed.
No new arguments.
Okay, well, you can bring up new examples until the negative rebuttal.
Right, until the last negative speech, you can bring up new examples, but no new arguments. So the overarching argumentation, logic, and philosophy is going to stay the same throughout the round. The examples are simply support, so if you want to bring up additional support, no one really has a problem with that. Just don't bring it up in the last affirmative speech, because then you're not giving the negative a chance to respond. Yeah. And then also you can use your flow as a reference for later. I've done that sometimes where I'm in a round and this person brings up an argument that I could swear was identical to one I heard two rounds ago. So go back in your flow, flip back, look at what the other person said, look at your responses to it two rounds ago, and see if maybe you can use some of that even to help yourself in that round. Now, at the same time, you don't want to rely so much on those previous flows that it becomes almost a crutch and you can't live without it and you have to, you know, look back every single time. But you can use it as sort of a supplement, if you will, just in those cases when you need something extra. All right? A couple things to keep in mind when you're flowing. Practice writing small so that you can fit all the arguments onto one page if possible. I have seen flows that consisted of two or even three pages. The problem with that, though, is then every time you've got to flip through a couple of pages just for one round, it's much easier to have everything on one page so you can look at it and see an overview of the whole round at once. So practice writing a little bit smaller. Write legibly so that you can read your flows, and also even so that other people can read your flows, especially if you're in a club. A lot of times you'll share flows with each other so that the club as a whole can find out the arguments that are out there. So make sure you can read it, make sure other people can read it as well. Write purposefully. You know, flowing is not a time for you to write down everything that that person is saying. You only want to write down the key points of their argumentation, and you want to spend a lot of time abbreviating so that you have more time to work on cross-examination questions, rebuttal arguments, and all of that. And definitely practice flowing. Practice is going to be a huge thing. You guys will have the chance to practice today when you see the demo debate, and then in your three practice rounds, you'll be able to try a hand at flowing while you are thinking of those CX questions and those rebuttal arguments. It will be very difficult at first. I think my first round was actually at the Training Minds camp here in Florida 2 years back. That was actually where I had my first LD round ever, so it was at their little practice rounds, and Shane Baumgardner was the coach. Now that's frightening already, because Shane's an amazing LDer. So to have him judging your first LD round ever is a little bit unsettling. My flow was okay. I got the whole concept of pre-flowing. So I was the affirmative, and the affirmative column looked really good, because I had my case all pre-flowed. After that, the notes suddenly went from really good to barely anything written because I had no idea what to do at that point. It's going to be difficult. It will be, but stick with it, practice, and you'll sort of get over that hill after a few times of practicing it. So by the end of this camp, you should be fairly comfortable with the whole process of flowing while thinking of questions and responses at the same time.